You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, November 7th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, arrests continue from Occupy Worcester to Occupy Georgia. And it's apparently not a crime now to hit protesters with your car. Good to know. The Obama administration's deportation leaves thousands of kids essentially orphaned. Race to the top, demoralizing teachers. Mississippi tomorrow will vote. Will vote on whether or not they should declare that a fertilized egg is a person. Puts a little pressure how early you have to name those people. And, of course, it's a boon for, you know, those in the photography business. You'll be taking now, you'll head down to Sears with your fertilized egg. Take pictures. Send it out to the family, put it up on Flickr. And a record number of unemployed now have no benefits. All that and more, but today on the show, Glenn Greenwald will be joining us to talk about his new book, With Liberty and Justice for Some. That'll be coming up in just a moment. But first, a little bit of house cleaning, folks. The we won an award type of house cleaning. So, folks, we have won the podcast award for the best news political show podcast online or anywhere. And, you know, it is common to say we couldn't have done it without you. But in this case, it's not a platitude. It's literally, we could not have done it without you. I tried to vote multiple times. You can't do it. They won't let you. So it was your votes. In fact, Matt actually forced me every day. He's like, did you remember to vote? Ah, darn it. No, yes, I will. But it was all of your votes, obviously, which, made it possible. Other winners, the WTF pod. One in best comedy, but I want to thank all of you for your votes. I want to thank Citizens Radio and particularly Best of the Left for endorsing us. I mean, it makes it a little bit easier, I gotta say, to win an award where like 20% of your competition says vote for the other guy. But we'll take it. We will take it. Thank you so much, everyone. It's very exciting. I don't even know how to react because I never win awards.
I hope we get a trophy.
Yeah, we get a trophy or like a paperweight or something like that. I don't know what happens, but we'll put it up on our blog. We'll get a logo, put it up there. So that's pretty exciting for us. And I also. I'm going to throw this out there. I'll talk about it at the end of the show. But there's been a lot of pressure on me by various people to, in fact, to celebrate our 1-year anniversary for Majority Report to Redux, the revived Majority Report, by doing a 24-hour show. 24 continuous hours of me talking and interviewing people, and then I suppose at one point just sort of passing out. I don't know exactly how you do that. And I'm seriously contemplating it. And we very well may do it. It would be in a week and a half from now, I guess. Like the 17th?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
And
actually, I'm pretty sure it would be a 25-hour show, because didn't we discuss how if we were going to do it, we start that day, the first day, at the regular show time, and then we make it all the way back around to end the show?
No, I would do 24 hours. Maybe I'd do 24 hours in 1 minute, but no. We would run.
So we'd end Friday's show.
Yeah, I don't know the details yet, Matt. Jesus. I think it's going to happen. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Maybe. We'll decide. We'll see.
Well, we were milling it around.
Maybe if we get, maybe I'll do like a thing like if we get 10 new members in a day, I'll do a 24-hour show, something like that. I imagine 24-hour shows have been done before. I don't know if they've ever been done by a single host. And I doubt that they've been done, but, you know, CNN does 24 hours of news, right? Theoretically. And
well, they don't have the same guy sitting there giving 24 hours of news.
I understand, but we have limitations on the show. And on top of that, I would also say that I got very excited about the idea of people down at Occupy Wall Street listening to the program. Why not give them a – they're out there every night doing 24 hours. Not that big of a deal to do 24 hours in this tiny closet that we broadcast from. It's the talking part that's difficult. But we've got to take a break. And speaking of talking, we're going to come back and we're going to be talking to Glenn Greenwald of Salon.com, author of the new book, With Liberty and Justice for Some, How the Law is Used to Destroy Equality and Protect the Powerful. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report, having a little technical difficulty reaching Glenn. So we will continue onward. We'll probably take calls a little bit early today, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Let us start with just a – well, this is sort of wonderful. And, you know, apropos of Glenn Greenwald's premise, which is with liberty and justice for some, how the law is used to destroy equality and protect the powerful. This is a clip of Bill Black, who was one of the chief investigators of the savings and loans crisis. And a brief interview with him down a clip from Occupy Wall Street. I guess he was down there about a week and a half ago. I interviewed him and for Ring of Fire, and we have extras on that. I'm going to run that eventually. It's a great interview with a guy who really knows his stuff. But I want you to just listen carefully to Bill Black, who makes the distinction between what has happened in the past in these type of events and what has happened now. Let's play this clip.
That means roughly 2 million fraudulent loans, and we find that it was the lenders who put the lie in the liar's loans. Next part, that's what hyperinflated the bubble. When you get a really huge bubble, when it collapses, you get the great recessions and depressions. So that's what drove this crisis. That's what made the criminal bankers rich, and that's what cost us 10 million American jobs and $11 trillion. A trillion is 1,000 billion. $11 trillion lost versus $150 billion in the savings and loan crisis. In this crisis, as I told you, we made over 10,000 criminal referrals in the savings and loan crisis, which was 1/70th as big. In this crisis, zero criminal referrals by the same agency, therefore zero convictions, and only as recently as 2007, 120 FBI agents nationwide supposed to deal with 4 million frauds, whereas we had 1,000 FBI agents just on the savings and loan crisis, which again was 1/70th of the size.
So I'm guessing you're a fan of Ben Bernanke?
Yeah.
What's your comments about Ben Bernanke?
If we want to fix the problem, you got to start always by fixing the regulators. So you can't fire Ben Bernanke, as a, you know, the president doesn't have that power, but he can ask for his resignation. And you got to fire Geithner, and you got to fire Holder. Holder is the attorney general. Geithner is the treasury secretary. Bernanke and Geithner were promoted or re-upped because they were failures as financial regulators, and indeed they were the most abject failures as regulators in the history of regulation.
I couldn't agree with you more.
And that video was put up by wearechange.org. The largest banks in this country are larger now than they were when Obama took office, and are nearing the level of profits they were making before the depths of the financial crisis in 2008, according to recent government data. This is from the Washington Post. Wall Street firms, independent companies, and security trading arms of banks are doing even better. The people who caused the financial destruction in this country that has left tens of millions unemployed are now doing even better than they were before they destroyed the economy. They earned more in the first 2.5 years of the Obama administration than they did during 8 years of the George W. Bush administration. This is from industry data. Neil Barofsky, the former federal watchdog for the Troubled Assets Relief Program, said there's a very popular conception out there that the bailout was done with a tremendous amount of firepower and focus on saving the largest Wall Street institutions, but with very little regard for Main Street. That's actually a very accurate description of what happened. A recent study by two professors at the University of Michigan found that the banks, contrary to the story that we were told, we need to save the financial institutions because if we don't, they won't lend money and our economy will collapse. Well, a study by two professors at the University of Michigan found that banks did not significantly increase lending after being bailed out. Rather, and we know this, they used the taxpayer money to invest in risky securities that profited from short-term price movements. Arbitrage. The study found that bailed out banks increased their investment returns by nearly 10% as a result. Banks have also benefited from the large increase during the recession in unemployment insurance. Because banks offer debit cards to the unemployed to collect their government benefits, and they rake up money via fees. Not to mention that many of these profits that banks have and security firms have enjoyed have come essentially by just loaning us the money we gave them back to us at a higher percentage rate. States with their budgets shattered by the financial crisis and recession have increasingly been moving to enroll new employees into Wall Street-run retirement accounts rather than government pension programs. This is why they wanted to privatize Social Security, because it's potentially more lucrative for Wall Street, which can charge fees for managing the savings of individual retirees. Since December 31st, 2008, the largest banks, those with more than $100 billion in assets, have increased their total combined assets by about 10%. And as banks get bigger, this is the sort of the most disturbing aspect of this on some level. As they get bigger, they become more profitable because investors are more likely to lend them money at lower rates, which they can then flip to loan out at higher rates or to use to leverage even more bets. And why do they loan them money at interest rates lower than typical for the industry? Because these investors know that these banks now are not only too big to fail, they're even bigger. So the government is going to backstop any losses. The largest banks, including Bank of America, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo, earned $34 billion in profit in the first half of this year, nearly matching what they earned in the same period in 2007 and more than the same period of any other year. Securities firms have fared even better. They've generated $83 billion in profit during the past 2.5 years, compared with $77 billion during the entire Bush administration. And, of course, if you have figured out how to bilk the taxpayer of this type of money, well, then, of course, your compensation will rise and bounce back as well. Financial firms paid about $20.8 billion in bonuses for work done in 2010. In New York City, the average Wall Street salary last year grew 16.1% to $360,000, which is more than five times the average salary of a private sector worker in the city. My income did not go up 16.1% last year. Did yours, Matt? No.
No? No.
That's why we have no power for your microphone.
Yeah.
Before we get to, well, let me continue on this theme, because this is pretty stunning stuff. Right now, the unemployment number rate dipped slightly to 9%. For the most part, it's probably a function of people leaving the workforce. But the reason why we are experiencing such anemic job growth in this country is because public sector jobs now account for the smallest share of the nation's employment since the 2008 financial crisis. I mentioned the other day, in October, 24,000 public sector jobs were cut. If state and local governments had not contracted as much as they have contracted over the past 2 years because of the essentially the failure of the federal government to give them more money, even more than they gave them. You've got a drop in revenues on a state and local and, of course, federal level because the recession has hurt tax revenues. So states and cities and counties cut back. If they hadn't, the job rate would have been at 8.7%. Not to mention the economic effect of all those people not having money to go out and spend money. The proportion of government jobs fell to 16.7% in October, its lowest level in 3 years. Of the 80,000 net new jobs that were created last month, 15,000 were at temporary help services. During the recession of 08 and 09, public employers generally held steady, not slashing jobs. Why was that? Can you say stimulus? And then, as the stimulus ended, we see job loss at state and local levels rise. It's very strange, folks, but contractionary government policies tend to contract the economy. And meanwhile, most of America's unemployed, the majority of unemployed Americans, and we're talking nearly now 15 million unemployed Americans, not to mention underemployed Americans, but at least 15 million unemployed Americans, the majority of them, have exhausted their unemployment benefits. Nearly one third of those 15 million unemployed Americans have had no job for a year or more. Congress is expected, according to the AP, to decide by year's end whether to continue providing emergency employment benefits for up to 99 weeks in the hardest hit states. Let me guess. The Republicans will attempt to stop this, and then the Democrats will, of course, cave in another hostage situation and provide more tax cuts for wealthy people. Census Bureau says unemployment benefits kept 3.2 million people from slipping into poverty last year. Poverty is annual income less than $22,000 and some change for a family of four. CBO has estimated, just to give you a sense of the stimulative effect of how much unemployment insurance actually helps the economy. For every $1, now I know this is going to make conservative heads explode, because this is more complicated than a six-year-old could understand. So I know there's a lot of movement conservative types out there who are just going like, can you believe this? Look at the lies they're pushing. CBO, Congressional Budget Office, the nonpartisan, although they use math, which I guess makes you inherently liberal for conservatives. For each $1 spent on unemployment benefits, it generates up to $1.90 in economic growth. Why is this? Because when you are unemployed and you have no income, every dollar you get, you immediately spend. You tend to immediately spend. And this goes into the economy, and that dollar gets spent over and over again and creates more activity. It is considered the most effective government policy for increasing growth among 11 options it's analyzed. Now, I don't think it's analyzed, just give people more money. drop money out of airplanes would be more helpful than what we're doing right now. Meanwhile, and I assume this is just an attempt by the Obama administration to look tough on crime and security. It's an electoral strategy. But the way that we treat undocumented immigrants in this country is reprehensible. It's reprehensible. You want to cry that I'm not going to call them illegal aliens? I will call them illegal aliens when you start referring to anybody who has made a civil violation. That's what overstaying your visa or entering this country without documentation. It is a civil violation. It is not a crime. It simply is not a crime. It is probably a less criminal act than an old person buying their drugs online in Canada. It is equivalent to a speeding ticket. Yet we don't refer to illegal seniors. We don't refer to illegal drivers. But we do these people. And, you know, the best estimates show that half of undocumented immigrants, half of them overstay their visas. The other half come into this country without papers. An unprecedented increase in the deportation of undocumented immigrants has left an estimated 5,100 children, 5,100 children languishing in U.S. foster homes. Kids born in the United States, U.S. citizens, parents get arrested and then deported. A Shattered Families report from the Applied Research Center, an activist group, is the first to analyze national data related to the separation of families involved in deportations. The Obama administration deported 46,000 parents of children who are U.S. citizens in the first 6 months of 2011. This may be their job creation program. Almost one in four people deported is the parent of a United States citizen child. Thousands of children enter the welfare system and are often essentially stuck there. Child welfare authorities lack formal policies for dealing with deported parents, the report says. Children often fall through the cracks. After the parents are deported, the researchers found that families remain separated for long periods, with child welfare agencies and juvenile courts often moving to terminate the parental rights of deported immigrants. Children who don't have other immediate family are then put up for adoption. So we don't even know, at least from this story, how many of those children simply are just separated from the parents and end up living with relatives. Forcibly separated from their families, so that the administration can look muscular to some independent voter who really doesn't like brown people. Just stunning. Meanwhile, arrests at Occupy Wall Street, Worcester, which was pretty awesome to watch. My hometown getting active. There used to be big protests back in the 60s there. Abby Hoffman was from that area. There was a very big protest. Occupy Georgia. Cop ran over a guy with his motorcycle. And in Occupy DC, the Koch brothers had a gala or some type of shindig. Occupy protesters protested outside of the event. It turned into sort of mayhem. The worst of it, though, was that in two separate incidents, one car essentially ran over protesters. Now, in D.C., there's often protests which end up in the streets, often protests which end up all over the place. The Washington, D.C. police are supposedly trained to deal with this stuff. But there have been reports of a car that basically just decided to clear the road himself. And as far as I know, he didn't even get a ticket. Stories are rather disturbing. And lest you think that this is a case of protesters going in the streets and antagonizing cars, one of the women hit 6 months pregnant. Apparently, some people were just sitting down in the road. They were letting cars pass, but they were sitting down the road. And one guy just said, I'm going to mow him down. And people were just lucky enough to get out of the way.
They stopped the driver, even, and they let him
go
afterwards.
Oh, no, they stopped him, and they said, what's up?
And then they gave tickets to the people he hit.
That's right. I think the violation is illegal lying down underneath a car that's moving over you. Meanwhile, in Michigan, this is just such a lovely story that is probably only eclipsed by what they're trying to do in Mississippi. The Republican-led Michigan Senate. Now, remember, you need also the House in Michigan and the governor to sign off on a bill. But just to give you just a sense of how demented these people are. The Republican-led Senate in Michigan had a bill called Matt's Safe School Law, which was an attempt to ban harassment in schools and bullying in schools for little kids. Because there have been multiple occasions where, particularly in Matt Epling's case, which the name was named after, the law was named after him. It's a teenager, young teenager, who committed suicide shortly after he was essentially gay bashed or gay hazed in school. And, you know, there's all sorts of anti-bullying programs that are being developed in schools because it's a real problem. Leads to kids being committing suicide. And it's particularly difficult if you are a kid who is aware or confused as to your sexuality, or aware that your sexuality is not what your friends is or the bullies is, and kids get picked on. And sometimes it leads to horrible tragedy like suicides. And usually it just leads to scarring and emotional distress that requires years of therapy or drug use or something to deal with. And so Michigan, to their credit, tried to institute this law, Matt's Safe School Law. It passed, but not until Republicans in the Republican Senate added these words. This section does not prohibit a statement of a sincerely held religious belief or moral conviction of a school employee, school volunteer, pupil, or pupil's parent or guardian. In other words, you can haze somebody for being gay if you genuinely believe being gay is bad or icky. If you really believe it, rather than are just, you know, sir, I guess, pretending. So in other words, if these people who tormented Matt Epling to the point where he decided, I need to commit suicide to escape this. If they came out and said, yeah, sorry about the suicide, but got to be honest with you, we really, really, genuinely hate gays. Hands washed. Well, here's Gretchen Whitmer, a Michigan senator, slamming this amendment to this bill and passing it in this fashion.
You know, I personally have had some pretty hard days here in the Senate this term. Whether it was what happened to the school aid fund, or raising pension taxes, or the continued assault on the middle class, I think this was my lowest point personally. Because here today you claim to be protecting kids, and you're actually putting them in more danger. There are at least 10 Michigan children in the past decade whose deaths are directly attributable to bullying. I have their names and their ages here, but I can't read them. I think they've been too victimized as it is. But had this bill that you're going to pass today been law in effect while they were alive, how many of their deaths would have been prevented? Zero. You may be able to pat yourself on the back today and say that you did something, but in actuality, you're explicitly outlining how to get away with bullying. Your exceptions have swallowed the rule. As passed today, bullying kids is okay if a student, parent, teacher, or school employee can come up with a moral or religious reason for doing it. You've set us back farther, creating a blueprint for bullying. So this might solve a political problem that the Republicans have, but be clear, you are papering over the problem that is a reality faced by hundreds of kids in Michigan schools every day. In fact, not only does this not protect kids who are bullied, it further endangers them by legitimizing excuses for tormenting a student. And the saddest and sickest irony of this whole thing is that it's called Matt's Safe School Law. And after the way that you've gutted it, it wouldn't have done a damn thing to save Matt. This is worse than doing nothing. It's a Republican license to bully. I ask that my comments be recorded in the journal as my no vote explanation.
Impressive speech. Just reprehensible. You know, when I called years ago, when I called the American Family Association and did a call, and maybe we'll pop that on, we'll play it one of these days. I called because they had written a piece about Lenny the Shark being a metaphor for a gay guy. And the guy said to me in the extended call, he said, you know, all these anti-bullying things, I think a little bit of peer pressure is okay. Now, of course, you can't say that because then you sound like, then, you know, people just start making a big deal out of it. But I think a little peer pressure is okay to keep people from being gay. So if you genuinely believe that gays are icky and deserve to be tormented, you're off scot-free. Sends quite a message to the kids, doesn't it?
At least in Michigan.
Right.
Yeah. The ridiculous thing is that the kid's own father came out and said, I do not want this bill passed, and they went ahead and passed it anyway.
Of course not. Of course not. Because it's not just in Michigan. It becomes the template for all of these people. I'm not bullying. I'm just carrying out God's will because I really believe God doesn't like gays. I'm doing God's work. God flows through me as I pick on these people. All right, folks. That is our free program for today. Join me in the better half by calling 646-257-3920. Folks, your support for this best news and politics podcast online needs your support. We are not funded by corporate behemoths. We're not funded by behemoths or corporations. We're not funded by anybody but you.
And you'll be a member of the best political podcast in the world.
That's right, in the world. China? Nope. Russia? No. Middle East? No. Europe? No. Latin America? Nope. Canada. No, this. This one. The best political podcast in the world. And, for all I know, in the netherworld and in the world above. I mean, I haven't seen no evidence to the contrary. But we need your support to continue. Not just to continue to get better. Not just to continue to offer more. To continue. So just go to MajorityFM. Majority.fm. MajorityReportRadio.com. We'll send you there too. Become a member today. You know, or tomorrow. I guess I'll decide tomorrow. Maybe if I get 10 new members over the next 24 hours, we'll do the 24-hour show next week. And then I could probably get an award for the best 24-hour podcast. All right, folks, join me in the better half of the program. As always, you can support the show by going to our Amazon link and buying Just Coffee from Just Coffee, Fair Trade Coffee, Tea, or Chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% discount. See ya in the better half.